Geopolitics and Empire is joined by Claudio Grass, who's a former airline executive, Swiss Peace Corps officer, and an investment manager specialized in precious metals. I've been following his work for, I don't know, how many years now. It's great work. Welcome to Geopolitics and Empire, Claudio.
Hey, thank you very much, Jorge. Always a pleasure. I mean, first time, first talk. I think I have 11 years of history, something, you know. I started, I think, writing 10, 11 years ago.
Yeah. I was just saying, I don't know what took me so long to get you on. I've been reading your stuff for like probably 5+ years. But in any case, I mean, there's so much going on in the world, Claudio, but I tend to start first with the global mega trend that's affecting us all, right? You know, the Great Reset. You were involved with the Planet Lockdown documentary films, and you know, it's this drive by an international elite to install a planetary dictatorship. They use whatever they can cook up to scare us into this new neo-feudalism, right? Terrorism, the weather, fake health scares, and so forth. And in fact, this week they're meeting at Davos, right? And so not too far from where you're at. So what's sort of your assessment for this push for world governments? Nothing which is new, but it seems to be reaching an apex point, no, or climax. So, you know, your take on the past couple of years, the planet lockdown, and this push, you know, who are these elites and how you view their agenda and how far they are along?
Yeah. We can see a push for toward centralization for quite some time. I mean, many years. You know, global problems need global solutions. Therefore, you need a global government. That's already in the pipeline, you know, for decades. And I think, yeah, I mean, because we are witnessing the end of socialism, I mean, this system has nothing to do with capitalism or free markets, you know. So it's really the end of socialism. It's the end of, I mean, money is, it's never the scarcity of money, especially not in a credit-based system. It's always about the scarcity of goods and services. And I think, you know, we have printed so much money. I mean, it's unprecedented in history. Everything comes to an end. And I think even, you know, the elites and the central bankers, you know, and all the institutional idiots, they basically understand that, yeah, you know, that this system is going bust, that we are at the end of a long-term cycle, you know, different cycles, at the end of different cycles, let's call it that way. And so you need to distort, you know, distract the people. So come up with this fake pandemic, you know, it's like a biblical script. The disease, you know, then artificial war, then we have artificial famines, and now the biblical flood. I always say the biblical flood most likely will be the flood, you know, with refugees coming into the Western world. I mean, so to me, I think, yeah, it's really, you know, the elites are, they understand it's over. They have a certain agenda. They believe they can somehow steer the sheeps into one direction, make sure that they still believe the nanny state will take care of them. Come up, you know, with this modern monetary theory, give them a universal basic income, transfer them into metaverse, have their fake reality in their digital world, you know, sitting at home eating bugs. I mean, it's so absurd, the whole stuff. So I think, yeah, I mean, it's Corona really, when it started in March, I basically said, this is the official invitation to leave the system because they will lock us out anyway. Back then, you know, people were saying, hey, Claudio, this is extreme. Forget about it. You know, it's really. And now, you know, we are 3 years in this 2 weeks flatten the curve bullshit. And we're still there. And you know, now we have this artificial war, of course, you know, in Ukraine, which is basically the old agenda of Helmut Mackinder, Seb Brzezinski, you know, how to Europe and Asia should not become a seamless market because, you know, the market goes from Lisbon to Vladivostok. And of course, you know, all the natural goods in the ground, you know, Russia and the industrial powerhouse of Germany cannot come together. I think that was also one of the main causes for the First World War, you know, to avoid that. And now we are back, you know, look at the guys, you know, the politicians are all 78 years old. So most of them are senile. And so the, you know, old guys are pushing the old ideas. That's where we are. And unfortunately, is that, you know, the majority of the people seem to become domesticated humans. Give me food and shelter. I don't want to think myself, you know, because if I would start to think myself, what's really going on, use my own mind independent of another person's guidance, I mean, most likely they would be shocked, you know, this kind of cognitive dissonance. But I mean, as Ayn Rand always said, you know, we can try to ignore reality, but one day reality is not going to ignore what's really going on. And so I think it's coming. I mean, you know, there is, the trend is clear. I think it's really, we're going into a much more decentralized future. Midterm, I think, you know, I don't see it centralized. I hope we're going to end up, you know, with hundreds of thousands and thousands of Switzerlands, or state of Switzerland, even better, you know, keep it as decentralized as possible. And I think that's maybe what, you know, at least the productive people who believe in themselves and understand that they are an enlightened individual, that they are, you know, part of this Western culture. You know, free speech, private property needs to be respected. We always have a choice. And to me, you know, freedom means we have a choice to decide between what's right and what's wrong, and not what's legal or illegal. And so I think, yeah, those values have been forgotten. They are now heavily under pressure. It's basically a cultural war. It's a war against Western civilization. And hopefully, you know, more and more people are going to wake up in the future once they realize that it's not the five-star restaurant any longer, but it might be, you know, a box at the McDonald's, and that the job is also gone, and that the future is not that bright, and that all these promises by government basically are empty bags. I'm going all the way up.
If you do find yourself stuck in a smart city, the Nomos app will help you survive COVID-1984 and the Great Reset. Nomos is a time bank that can be used by communities anywhere in the world. You just need to talk people into using it. I've spoken to the developer who is passionate about creating solutions for surviving and thriving in the apocalypse. Nomos is available in English and Spanish, so hurry and visit nomos.net before they roll out the cashless society and put you in the algorithm ghetto.
I hope we move in that direction as you described, and there's so many things you just mentioned there, but maybe to stick on the, you know, the geopolitical, you mentioned the artificial war, the multipolar. You've written about the East versus West. You know, your thoughts on, for example, Putin and Russia and Xi Jinping and China, because on one hand, as you describe, there is that, you know, Halford Mackinder, you know, world island heartland real aspect where there's a real geopolitical conflagration. But on the other hand, we see the East also, like in Russia and China. And I was living in Kazakhstan from 2017 until the pandemic. And they installed the QR codes and biosecurity measures in every country. And so I'm trying to figure out, you know, how is it sometimes it looks like it's East versus West, and then other times it looks like East and West versus their own populations. But nevertheless, you do see that part of the world coming together, BRICS plus, Saudi Arabia, trying to develop common currencies and integrating, right, you know, Iran and Syria and Venezuela and China and all these countries. How do you sort of view this shift as well? That includes de-dollarization. And so your further thoughts on East and West.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all based on the Hegelian dialectic, you know, problem, reaction, solution. So you always need to, I mean, divide and conquer, fear and control, shock and awe. That's basically, you know, what the elites are using to steer the people into a certain direction. So, I mean, you know, when I think about, let's say, Mao, for example, Mao was a Yale man. You know, he was back in 1973, front page, Yale University, the magazine. And so basically Mao has been built up by the Western world, you know, that's how he became chairman and started the Cultural Revolution. So I tend to believe that everything is a Muppet show and that there is nothing happening by coincidence in politics. But of course, you always have to divide the people, you know, because I mean, the feeling that I have is really that they are looking for a French Revolution 2.0. The king is dead. Long live the king. So, you know, just try to exchange the hats. But then we are sticked, of course, or the stuck in the same system again. But it's not going to solve any issues. You know? And I think that's why you need this East and West. War is the health of the state. I mean, ever you have problems internally, I mean, if you have some foreign aggression or, you know, you can basically accelerate fear and accelerate these national feelings. I mean, it might have an impact that it can prolong a certain politic. But I think, yeah. I mean, I tend to believe it's a Muppet show. You know, I don't see any good politicians basically who are in power, or that politics is the competition of crooks. And that's it. And I don't understand people even after 3 years, you know, I mean, we don't need rulers. I mean, I'm a grown up, I'm mature, you know, I'm self-sustainable. So I don't need anyone telling me what to think, what to eat, what to drink. You know, I think the whole idea that we need rulers, I mean, that only a slave needs slave masters. You know, but I think, you know, in the Western world, especially, you know, we really should forget about, you know, this two-class society system made up of people who live off tax money and others who have to pay taxes. You know, I think that's really the end. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And look at you always have to destroy an old system to create a new one. I mean, so even when you look at Hollywood and the movies, you know, I mean, so even they try to destroy the face into the institutions, into the nation state as well. So I think there is you know, they are playing a game, these elites, you know, just keep the people moving. And, but they also have no clue what's coming out of it at the end of the day. They try to promote a certain agenda. I think we can imagine that agenda or grasp it because we have been brainwashed for the last 30, 40 years through Hollywood. The world in 2025, pandemia, you know, everything is robot, artificial intelligence. I think it's all bullshit. You know, it's all bullshit. I mean, the car in my, the voice record or the voice system in my car still doesn't get when I ask, you know, for a certain song. Of course, can't be my Swiss accent. But so I mean, yeah, you know, because I mean, you often see people who truly believe that this is the only way forward. You know, that the future is made, that we don't have choice. So I think, yeah, people really, and that's sad, you know, people really, I mean, nothing is decided yet. But of course, you know, you have to take, you have to think, you have to take initiatives, you have to network and leave the system, prepare, you know, for the breakdown of the current system. Might take a year, two, three. In the meanwhile, you know, the longer it takes, the more war we're going to see. Civil rights or international wars, you know, this East-West bullshit. I mean, I really don't know yet, but I think if people prepare themselves, I mean, then even, you know, during the First and the Second World War, the ones who understood what's going on that did not become, you know, a part of the Muppet Show, I think they also survived in the best possible way.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I'm still on the fence on some issues, but it, more and more, I've read, you mentioned Mao and Yale, you know, a couple months back, I came across that material. And so, yeah, it very much does seem to be a show at the global level. But still, as you said, I think there's a element of black swan, you know, maybe elites, they're infighting between elites and someone launches nukes somewhere, you know, whether in Washington or Moscow, which I think would still help them with their agenda. As you said, war, they can build back better after destroying the old systems. But you mentioned also the technocratic aspect, and I would also agree that they tend to hype a lot of stuff. I don't think AI will become sentient. I think it's more like It's they programmed the AI to control us. And so they're hyping a lot of stuff. But you know, one of my concerns has been this cashless system. You've been writing about the digital currencies and CBDCs. Yeah. And you know, it's basically the social credit system. I like to call it the algorithm ghetto, or you know, rule algocracy, rule by algorithm. And in their own writings, like Nick Bostrom and others have talked about creating an algocracy, a global government run by AI software, a global surveillance state for our own good, right? Because yeah. The system knows better. And we saw with the COVID digital passports, you know, even here in Mexico, in some places in other parts of the world, you could not go buy. It's like the Book of Revelation. You couldn't buy or sell literally in food or in supermarkets without having your digital passport that said, gave you a green light that you were vaxxed or whatever. People were fired from work, so you couldn't work, you couldn't buy food, you couldn't travel. Some cases, you couldn't leave your home. I read about, like, in the Philippines, if you were caught unvaccinated on the street, they would fine you or jail you and whatnot. And so, you know, your further thought, and you've been talking about how you were censored and deplatformed on many platforms. So your further thoughts on this technocracy and this trend that we're going in this direction, and how much success they might have, or do you think at some point it's going to fall apart?
Okay, I mean, I think the most important aspect when it comes to the internet is that the internet came into existence without being planned. So it's basically quite anarchistic, you know, grown. I think, and the basis for the internet is complete decentralization. Of course, you know, we agreed to use certain protocols, standards, you know, to communicate. We use centralized Microsoft tools, stuff like this. So I think because the internet is completely decentralized, I believe it's not steerable, it's not controllable. Decentralized structures are by nature always more superior than centralized structures. So, you know, when we had this breakdown of WhatsApp and Facebook, you know, let's say 6, 7, 8 months ago, I mean, I was told that it was really an attack and they really had to pull the plug. You know, it was, they could not stop it, you know, the attack somehow. So that just shows, you know, I mean, so, of course, you know, we will have, even today, we can decide to use, you know, decentralized peer-to-peer software to communicate freely and so on. And of course, the internet connectivity needs to be assured in the future by, you know, this Internet of Things is not always that negative, because we have to establish new networks with Bluetooth, with all different kind mesh networks, you know, and then keep it extremely decentralized. And then from there, basically start it up. So I think whatever is coming, whatever is happening, the internet will be part of the future. It will also be accessible for the free, for the freedom loving individuals, that we can, still, communicate and trade with each other, even when, you know, when there might be a totalitarian structure. I mean, there is nothing, as I said, you know, nothing is decided. I mean, maybe we have to leave the cities, you know, maybe we have to relocate. I think I don't want to be in New York anyway, you know, when the grocery stores are empty. They are, what, 9 days between chaos and complete breakdown of, you know, society. And I think, yeah, these are, you know, so that's all coming. And all the technocratic stuff, I think even there we have a choice, you know, but we have to use our mind and choose carefully. And we have to also decide in which direction we want to go in general. You know, do we want to follow the centralized way, which is might be now the easier for the short term? Or are we willing to really, you know, say, no, this is not my Muppet Show any longer. You know, I have to go the opposite. I want to build up a network with like-minded individuals, go a bit off-grid, looking into certain areas where you have a good culture, a culture of trust still, you know, where people don't shoot each other as soon as there is no police in the streets. I mean, I think there are certain cultural regions are left. Of course, in Europe, I mean, Germany, France, that's a big UK. It's a huge problem. You know, even this cultural Marxism or this neo-Marxism. I mean, the Marxists were always saying, when they realized in the First World War that the proletarians are not going for the revolution, they basically had to switch. And they were saying the intellectuals and the guys in culture are going to lead the revolution. And that's where we are now, you know. And I think, yeah, it's pretty obvious, you know, it's this Muppet Show. So to me, it's just a big surprise that people are, yeah, not willing to look at it a bit more closer and to, I mean, this political correctness, of course, is terrible. You know, people that this is self-censorship when it comes to political correctness. But I think, you know, we are all reasonable human beings. Man, is that what distinguishes us from animals, that we can use reason? And at the same time, I believe in the creator. I believe in God or the universe, but something, a spirit. It's not just matter, like the materialists are telling us, the Marxists, you know, that the man is a piece of meat. And so you can basically breed him like an animal. You know, I think all the people on our side, they understand that there is a God, that there is a creator, that this is not just the Big Bang. You know, give me the first seconds and then I explain you how this world came into existence. All these anointed intellectual idiots. Terrible. I mean, really, it's absurd. It's so absurd. But hopefully I was able to answer that question.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, that Stockholm syndrome among the populace. I mean, this morning I read some 30-year-old American Idol TV star dropping dead. We see there's just so many people dropping dead daily. And the level of, as you said, this is Stockholm syndrome. Like, what's it going to take? On one hand, what's it going to take for people to wake up? On the other hand, I think you're alluding to it. We can't wait for these people. We have to move on and start making, preparations to survive and thrive. And to get back to the economic situation, I've been following the Austrian school for a long time, you know, this crack up boom that seems to be coming. I thought it'd come much earlier. They seem to just keep being able to extend it into infinity. You had the global financial crisis 2008. And then, of course, a lot of people talk about how during 2020, you know, there was going to be this economic crisis, but they used the pandemic to sort of, keep moving, kick the can down the road. But I'm starting to see signs again of the crack up boom approaching. We see all over the planet, supply chains breaking down, shops that are empty. You see people help wanted signs all over the place. Inflation is just raging insanely all in many countries, and it's not going away. People talk about hyperinflation. So your sort of thoughts on this economic crisis or crash that's going to come at some point, you know, how bad is it going to be? Just sort of your feeling on what's ahead on the economic front.
Yeah, I think, I wouldn't be surprised if people would lose 30% of their living standards this year. Inflation is there. You know, we have this, we started an avalanche 3 years ago. Everything takes time. But we have riots in 90 countries. We have food shortages. We have, all these zombie companies in the economy in the US, also in Europe. And now Germany is being deindustrialized. So all the politics by the Western world in general, it's going against the interests of their own people. So now with the energy, they also control that narrative. You know, they will decide also in the future, you get the energy and you will not get the energy. And they might also steer, a lot of new debt into a new bubble, this Build Back Better bullshit bubble, which is not, so it might prolong a bit in combination with MMT and UBI, so you keep the slaves a bit more focused calm. But at the end of the day, it's not going to work. It never worked, and it will also not work this time. But it might prolong the whole system a bit longer. But on the other side, I think, inflation, it can... these black swans can happen at any time. And now, interestingly, I think, because when it comes to gold, for example, or precious metals, you have those, we just have seen the signals. So, for example, gold was breaking up or breaking out against, government bonds, the S&P 500, the tech sector, in all different currencies. So that we have seen those signals back in 1999, 2000. And that's when we started this 11-year bull market for gold, when we went from 180 to 1900 at the end of the day. And I think, so that's one of the signals which we have been waiting for a long time. And so I think, it just shows, paper currency, gold is not losing, just paper currency going up and down versus gold. And with inflation, it just shows. I mean, also when you look at gold in Hungarian forint, I think it's up, what, 45%, you know, Turkish lira, what, 70%, euro, I don't know where we are now, 10%. But I mean, it just shows, you know, so the trust, whenever people have trust in the institutions, then also the currency is getting stronger of that institution. And I think now we can see that it's diminishing. And that I wouldn't be surprised, you know, to see a euro crisis this year. And when it comes to, I mean, when we look at the total financial universe, I think 52% is still, you know, the United States. Europe is 9.8%, you know, and then we still have the world currency reserve, US dollar, with 58-60% still of all the reserves on US dollar. So to me, I still have the feeling, you know, that the dollar or gold at the end of the day. And in the meanwhile, I believe euros might go, you know, or other currencies, and that, and when people lose, when they become nervous, that they basically flee into the safe haven, which still is considered the US dollar. And that would then also lead to that crack up boom, which you mentioned at the beginning. But I mean, we might be wrong, and you know, the dollar might go before. At the end of the day, nobody knows the future. But I mean, at the end of the day, we should come up or think about stuff and come up with decisions where that kind is, this or this kind, these details will not make a difference when it comes to the preservation of our wealth. And also, you have possibilities.
You mentioned Europe, and since you're there, get your further thought on that. I'm a proud Croatian and Croatian citizen, but I'm ashamed to be an EU citizen. I've never been a fan of the European Union. I view it as the blueprint for world government, technocracy. It's anti-democratic, if I recall some of the founders like Jean Monnet, even in their own writings, were saying that. Some say the EU has Nazi roots. Soviet dissidents like Vladimir Bukovsky have described the EU. Even Mikhail Gorbachev, who I met a couple years ago and shook hands with, the late Gorbachev, they were talking about the EU as the new European Soviet. And so people are talking about the disintegration of the EU. And you were talking about Germany. I mean, I was in the US recently. I met a German Croat, and he was saying, like, yeah, it's bad. It's being deindustrialized, inflation. It's just crazy. And so, you know, your further thoughts on the European Union as well as Europe, you know, as a whole.
Yeah, I'm very bearish when it comes to Europe. I mean, at the end of the day, we are the in between, you know, the US and the East at the end of the day. And when we look at what's going on with Germany, I mean, we are really back to the Morgenthau plan after the Second World War, when the goal was, okay, we have to destroy Germany. It should become an agrarian country so that it will be no future threat or whatever. And then, of course, they came with the Marshall Plan, and the Marshall Plan, it was clear that if they really want to spread, you know, all these US dollars and to become another push for this world currency. And then they also knew that Germany needs to be prosperous as well. Otherwise, it's not going to work. And so now we had that for a cycle, you know, for these 50 years or something. And now now it's over again, and we are going back. I mean, we are, or let's say 100 years. I mean, we are really, there are so many similarities and patterns of the past that we are seeing these days. You know, which, I mean, we are going back in time. We're going back to barbarism. You know, as long as and that's Europe. You know, the migration crisis. It's different cultures. You know, I'm always saying, you know, I was living 2 years in the Middle East. I have friends from the Arab world, Egypt. You know, from Syria, from Lebanon, everywhere. And I love the culture. I felt extremely comfortable down there. But of course, you know, when I was talking to my Syrian friends, for example, they were always telling me, hey, they have seen this Hollywood movie, Muppet Show, you know, so saying, hey, if we can make it to Germany, then, you know, or to Europe, you know, then there is where milk and fruits and everything. And I get a house, I get the car. So they had all these naive ideas, you know, because they have never been allowed to travel or then were locked up also under their government and so on. But this is, it's really just to destroy the cultures and to create those identity, political identity groups, and to create tension among the people living in a certain country. Because if you push it politically, but the people have to pay for it, and are not being asked if they agree with it, you know, and it's really, it's a clear political agenda to really, and you cannot, I mean, if you're my Calcutta, you become Calcutta. I mean, that's what, and I think that's, it's really just to weaken the whole structure. And when we look at woke, the woke culture, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like in the Catholic Church, you know, the original sin, you know, so woke is basically if you are born white and male and heterosexual and maybe even a Christian, I mean, then you are, yeah, then you are, that's the origin sin, you know, you cannot escape from it. So it's the new religion. And so it goes also against, you know, maybe, you know, the people in the Western world in general.
Yeah, I mean, again, they talk about this in their own words. I recall a BBC interview with Peter Sutherland, you know, big high-level diplomat, politician who's been attended Bilderberg and UN. And he, what you just said, he said himself that that was their goal, to mix the cultures, yeah, and that sort of thing. You know, my trick, as you mentioned, white, male, Christian. I just became a Mexican 5 years ago. I became a Mexican citizen, so I'm a minority now. They can't say anything about me. I've got my get out of jail free card. You can't call me you know, white, whatever. I'm Mexican. So, anyways, yeah. You know, that's just a loophole gaming the system. But talking about, you know, everything we've talked about, I ask my guests from all walks of life, how do you know, how do we, the individual and the people surrounding you know, that we network with, how do we best prepare to weather the storm ahead? You know, there's gold, of course, buying physical assets, gold, silver, property, farmland. There's a lot of people that I've been talking to fleeing here to Mexico, where I am, or Latin America, like, you know, Uruguay. I've had Doug Casey on the program, Matt Smith, who are down in Uruguay, others going to Paraguay, others going to different parts of other parts of the world. But, you know, key themes like buying physical assets as much as you can, and forming a like-minded group, you know, network or community, parallel society, parallel structures, parallel economy. And so, and a lot, as you said, a lot of people leaving urban areas and going to rural areas. And so your sort of further thoughts on preparing for these hard times ahead.
I mean, that's also exactly what we are also doing over here over the last 3 years. You know, I started 3 years Plan B. It's basically a small municipality in the southern part of Switzerland. So it's off grid. It's a small, narrow road that goes up there. You know, not too many people living there. So I brought in, I think, 250 people over the last 3 years from abroad looking at it. And in the meantime, now we have, I think, 90 or 100 different projects over here in Switzerland. But of course, it needs time. But I mean, yeah, everyone has his own rhythm. And still, when it comes to Europe, of course, you know, if I would be in Germany or somewhere in France, or in Italy, I mean, maybe I would be a bit more. I mean, even also when you have seen, you know, how the government treated the people. I mean, Switzerland was a completely different story than the rest of the world. You know, no police going after us, and you know, or these lockdowns have been different. I never wear the muzzle. For example, I was even flying without wearing a muzzle. I mean, you can always hack the system. I never had troubles. I was nobody was hostile against me, for example, in Switzerland, not wearing a muzzle and so on. I was also traveling all over Europe for this movie. And basically, it was the same. You could always, I mean, I had a medical certificate, of course, because I cannot wear a muzzle. It's not good for my health. So I didn't want to have disputes with the police. You know, I'm not a troublemaker. But of course, I'm a free man, and I can always find a way out, you know, how to deal with it. But I think, yeah, we cannot do much more. I mean, even now, you know, planning is really hard because we don't know how it will develop in the future. So I think property, I mean, when I talk to people over here in Switzerland, for example, I mean, it's too early to buy property. You know, that's why also a lot of people are buying gold. Because, you know, real estate is coming down anyway. I mean, the great reset, you know, you own nothing and you will be happy. I mean, it starts with denying, you know, the right of an individual to command himself. You know, and so that's the logic outcome. So, but I mean, so real estate crisis is coming. These prices are going to drop. You know, maybe we're going to lose 90% in real estate like we have seen 100 years ago. And yeah, and you don't know, you know, if there is a war. I mean, it's really dangerous that, I mean, all these weapons going into Ukraine, you know, and Ukraine is a shithole, to be frank, you know, because it has been so corrupted for decades, centuries. And now we basically send, you know, weapons over there. So I have the feeling, you know, in the future, these weapons, you can even buy Stinger on the darknet. So, I mean, and Ukraine is so corrupt that they're going to sell their weapons to everywhere. I don't know where they're going to pop up. Most likely, you know, in Europe, or it will be used against Europe. Everything is possible. But I mean, this, the whole show, it's, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
So are you speaking from experience? I guess you guys got a Stinger you bought for your a little community out there in Switzerland. No, just kidding. Are you going to Davos this week or no? To the World Economic Forum?
I go in that direction, of course, but I'm not going to go to Davos. No, I think even the World Economic Forum, I mean, these are just the anointed idiots who truly believe that they are so wise and so intelligent and so powerful that they can change the world, that they can stand there and say, okay, we're going to limit, you know, global heating, you know, by 1.5 degrees Celsius. I mean, it's just absolutely nonsense. You know, what these freaks do they believe, you know, who they are? I mean, I have a friend of mine. I know a few politicians, which I really adore, like Ron Paul, for example, or Gottfried Blum from the UK, or even also Václav Klaus, you know, former president of the Czech. And so he was always invited in the Davos at the beginning. And then I think already 10 years ago, he wrote an essay about Homo Davosicus, basically describing, you know, that these guys are coming together and they truly, they come together. They believe we can save the planet, you know, we can save the world. They are so brainwashed and so far away from, you know. So of course, you know, when he wrote that essay, he was basically then also not invited any longer. And but I mean, the WEF, you know, just, yeah, gangsters.
I am.
There, you know. Front organization. I mean, there are some other people most likely in the background. I mean, it's just part of the narrative. And yeah. And yeah, of course, I mean, they have people in government. I mean, you know, so you have an agenda and those anointed idiots.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I reference them because they are what we see, but there's much more behind. And I'm a huge fan of Václav Klaus, and Godfrey Bloom's been a guest of mine on the podcast here.
Oh, cool.
He's fantastic. And I've had Daniel McAdams of the Ron Paul Institute as well.
Oh, nice.
As a guest. And yeah, we've covered a lot. My sort of takeaway from you is, again, being optimistic and having grit and just moving forward with our own personal visions to protect ourselves and to thrive as much as we can. And I would agree with you. I think a lot of these plans or projects by the elites won't go exactly the way that they want, but nevertheless, there's going to be a lot of pain and fallout. And as you said, we don't exactly know where things are going to go. Is there any other issue that, you know, we haven't touched on that you think a lot about, or that's pressing, or you know, anything else you want to get across?
I mean, maybe you know, when we look at Switzerland, for example. Because, you know, today, I mean, you have the impact, you can have, let's say, a lot of people believe that Switzerland is the belly of the beast. You know, because you have all these international organizations, WHO, United Nations, Gavi, you know, the Bank of International Settlement, the World Economic Forum, and so on. And when we also look at the whole propaganda, you know, I mean, so the campaign against Switzerland started back end of the 90s under Clinton, you know, with Jewish money, and that we have basically, which was absolutely nonsense. I mean, it was, but that basically accelerated. And so, I mean, that people were even saying, you know, that Switzerland was important, that the Germans were able to go on with their war, which is absolutely nonsense as well. I mean, of course, Switzerland has been, we have been forced, we were the only country during the Second World War on the gold standard. And, you know, the Allies, plus, you know, also the Nazis and all the other guys, they basically wanted that Switzerland remains on gold standard, because everyone was making money in Swiss francs and then taking, you know, the gold. But we were a neutral nation. That's, you know, I mean, because Switzerland was always decentralized from the bottom up, you know. And we have seven presidents. We don't only have one president. We have been neutral, armed neutrality, which we have been given, you know, because the history of Switzerland is we basically sold 1.6 million mercenaries during our history. And so, especially when you had all the aristocrats over here in Europe, I mean, because the Swiss were selling the best mercenaries, I mean, the French royalties had, you know, Swiss legions as their personal protection. The same goes, you know, for all these rulers and kings and back then. And there was always one rule that, you know, if Switzerland or the Tagsatzung back then, you know, it was not Switzerland, of course, but it was, you know, if we are under pressure or being attacked from abroad, that we can basically call back, you know, all the mercenaries. And so a lot of these kings and so on, they thought, hey, let's leave Switzerland alone because they have no natural resources. You know, it's also shit all in a way, because that's what Engels said, you know, four different languages, very decentralized and so on. I mean, what do you want there? You know, Alps, hard winters and so on. And but I mean, this all in combination led to this special position within Switzerland, also because of the Alps. And because I still consider, you know, Switzerland is the model for a free world. At least, you know, it gives the right intention. It means, you know, we have to go decentralized, because Switzerland became the most prosperous nation, not because of banking secrecy and that kind of stuff, that we were basically taking in the money from all the crooks. It was really that we had a very weak government, a lot of freedom. People were not interested in politics. You know, it was really more about trade and innovation. And, you know, we always, I mean, all the Protestants, the Huguenots from France brought us the watch industry. You know, then we had the engineers from Germany, the Protestants who fled to us. Echevis, 1840, they had 1,500 employees. You know, they were produced in 1840, because before we had the Confederation and so on. So it was we were the highest industrialized country on the European mainland after the Brits. So, I mean, yeah, Switzerland, because of that decentralized structures, more freedom, more liberty, that was the basis for the prosperity of Switzerland. And of course, this has been turned, you know, over the last 20, 25 years. And of course, whenever you have liberty, then you also attract crooks. You know, the UN, I mean, it's perfect to go to Switzerland, neutral. Nobody was interested in politics. So it always makes sense, you know, also for the guys who want to hide something. And, you know, 50, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, what do you want to say? The UN are all the bad guys. I mean, people thought, they still believe that this is a good organization. I mean, I used to work 2 years for them. I know what a fucked up, corrupted organization it is. I mean, I give you one final example, because of Syria, for example. You know, I was responsible for the liaison between the Syrian authorities and the United Nations. And every week you had these sit-rep reports from the UN going on the global. It's a global report. And when I was looking in 2005, I was looking at Syria. There was, you know, Bashar Assad had to flee. There were shootings in Damascus, you know, that rebels are going against Assad and so on. And I always called, you know, in my naivety, I called the headquarters in Jerusalem saying, hey, who is writing that bullshit? You know, it's not true. Nothing is happening here. And so that just showed, you know, I mean, yeah. So these UN people, they read those reports. That's where you fabricate, you know, the narratives, you know, even a few years ago. And then you come up and say, this is a civil war. I mean, then, you know, the idiots working for the UN, of course, they believe it because they have read it, you know, the last few years and all. And it also goes into all these intelligence agencies and stuff like this. So, you know, it's a Muppet show. I cannot take it serious any longer. So, you know, when I'm on the other side, I met so many tremendous amount of great people, individuals, and I truly believe, you know, the productive ones like Ayn Rand, you know, go gold. You know, when the slave masters without slaves, so with unproductive slaves, what do they want to do? You know, they're just going to end the system. And I hope, you know, the productive ones, they will switch side and take over their own destiny.
Yeah, I mean, that was one reason I, you know, as you mentioned, I enjoyed living in Switzerland. Switzerland is an enjoyable place to live. I was in Geneva. I got to see some other parts of Switzerland, a bit too expensive for me to live there. But at the UN, you know, at my Geneva School of Diplomacy, I was a staff assistant for 6 months at the UN for the Czech Republic, actually, the mission, the Czech Republic's mission to the UN. And like you, I just saw all of this same stuff. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And even, you know, one of my professors who's on this podcast from time to time, Alfred de Zayas, former UN special reporter, he's off on Russia Today. He says the same thing. Like he was sent to, where was it, Venezuela to do a report for the UN. And he laid everything out, what was really happening. He sends it to the UN. No one reads it. They rewrite it. They throw it in the box in a closet and keep it quiet because, you know, same thing in Venezuela or Syria. They're not going to, the UN itself is censoring itself because they've got an agenda. And I always just viewed it as a globalist sort of tyrannical structure wanting just, you know, world government to control all of us. And look what they're trying to do now with the WHO and pandemic treaty and international health regulations. They want the UN to dictate to the at the minute level from Mexico here to Switzerland to every country how we are going to live our lives. No thank you.
No so, thank you.
Yeah, no thank you. Right. And so yeah, really, you know, again, I love your work. Is there any final thought you might have for us then?
Well, I think that's all. I don't want to stretch it, overstretch it. But right. It was a pleasure talking to you. Great.
Yeah, and is there, you know, I'll have all of your links in the description, but you've got your website. Where's the best place for people to find you and your work online?
Just www.cloudyourgrass.ch. And there I also run a blog. And if they're interested, you know, I write about, yeah, philosophy, precious metals, geopolitics, I mean, COVID. I just, there are different topics, but I look at it from the angle of freedom and liberty, of course. Based on these principles. So if they're interested in reading that kind of stuff, they can sign up. It's for free. And when they have questions, I'm always happy, you know, to answer emails. No problem.
How to avoid COVID-1984. Well, all right. Thank you for being on Geopolitics and Empire, Claudio.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
I hope you enjoyed this Geopolitics and Empire podcast. The website is geopoliticsandempire.com, and I encourage you to sign up to the free email list that notifies you of every new podcast and other important updates. The email list and website are our last lines of defense. We're being censored and deplatformed. It's almost impossible to find Geopolitics and Empire on the Google search engine. We've been blacklisted. YouTube frequently strikes videos. Facebook restricts our page. Reddit, Twitter, and LinkedIn take down posts. After the Associated Press mentioned Geopolitics and Empire in a 2021 article co-written with NATO or the Atlantic Council, our Patreon account was terminated. Vimeo also terminated our pro account at one point. In April of 2022, the Department of Homeland Security had PayPal ban us for life. The best free way to help Geopolitics and Empire is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or elsewhere and subscribe to all of our media channels. You can find the video broadcast now on 5 platforms, Odyssey, Rockfin, Rumble, BitChute, and Brighteon. You can find the audio broadcast on the entire podcast ecosystem, SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, and so on. My current favorite social media channels are Twitter and Telegram, but you can also find us on Gab, MeWe, Minds, Float, VK, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. You can support this guerrilla signal by donating via DonorBox, Buy Me a Coffee, Subscribestar, or Crypto. You can purchase a consultation with the host to talk about expatriation, geopolitics, or podcasting. You can also become a monthly or annual member via Stripe and receive benefits such as partaking in a monthly member Zoom call, get access to a weekly recording of my random thoughts, and a private Telegram channel. Thank you for listening.